Happens 1320 AM and W248 DE, broadcasting at 97.5 FM.
Keep up on the day's news, talk, and sports on Wisconsin's home for locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Christopher Cruz. Israel is defending its northern border from attacks by groups in Lebanon. And CBS's Linda Grantstein in Jerusalem says Israeli tanks and infantry pushed into Gaza this weekend.
The head of the Home Front Command said the war could last for months and the Israeli economy needs to reopen even during war. The army also says that the number of confirmed Israeli hostages held by Hamas has risen to 239 amid a growing humanitarian crisis in Gaza. Clashes also continued on Israel's northern border as troops struck a Hezbollah anti-tank missile squad.
The Pope and protesters around the world are calling for a ceasefire.
I'm Peter King. The U.S. voted against a U.N. resolution for a ceasefire between Israel and Hamas on Friday. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan tells Face the Nation the U.S. didn't pause in its hunt for terrorists after 9/11. Neither should Israel.
We also believe that there should be humanitarian pauses to get hostages out, potentially to get aid in, and we will continue to work toward that end.
The UN says thousands of people have broken into its warehouses to take food and other items in short supply. Peter King, CBS News.
The UAW has reached a tentative deal with Jeep maker Stellantis on a new contract after coming to terms with Ford last week. That leaves GM as the only automaker at odds with the union. Wayne State University business professor Merrick Masters believes workers at Stellantis and Ford will ratify the contract.
I think the members are going to do a cost-benefit analysis and probably come to the conclusion, I would guess the majority of them would, that if they hold out longer for a strike at Stellantis and at Ford, they're probably not likely to get that much of a better deal.
The deals with Stellantis and Ford offer workers a 25% increase in wages over the 4.5-year contract. A 14-year-old and a 22-year-old were killed in a shooting early this morning in Ybor City, Florida, near Tampa. It happened as hundreds of people left bars and clubs. Police Chief Lee Burkoff.
We're here today with an arrest of a suspect. We were able to charge Tyree Stephen Phillips, 22-year-old, with second-degree murder with a firearm.
People gathered at the Basilica of Saints Peter and Paul in the city of Lewiston, Maine today to pray and support one another as they recover from the worst mass killing in the state's history. This is CBS News.
If you need to hire, you need Indeed, because Indeed's all-in-one hiring solution helps you attract, interview, and hire candidates all from one place. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
Some intimate parts need the gentle, easy trim of a Gillette trimmer, and some need the closeness and comfort of a Gillette Intimate Razor, while others need a Gillette Anti-Chafe Stick. Gillette Intimate, the best a man can get down there. Buy now.
Fall into a hiring spree with Indeed. Their end-to-end hiring solution makes it easy to attract, interview, and hire candidates. Sponsor a job and instantly receive a short list of quality candidates whose resumes on Indeed match your job description. Visit Indeed.com/credits.
Okay, everyone, gather around. It's time for corny jokes about passing the torch.
The team at Kyrian's Welding was fused together solid.
Thanks for all the late nights and early shifts.
But double retirements mean the crew must bond with some certified new hires.
You've both gone the extra millimeter.
Indeed can help them hire great people fast.
I need Indeed.
Indeed you do. Our hiring platform instantly connects you with quality candidates, and you can schedule and conduct virtual interviews right from the Indeed dashboard. Visit Indeed.com/credit and get $75 towards your first sponsored job. Terms and conditions apply.
The D3.
D3 right of the circle. Badgers take the lead.
The throwdown.
Down the lane and sends it in and one.
The thrilling victory.
Badgers win it. Oh, did they dig in defensively tonight?
This is your radio home for Wisconsin Badger basketball.
Fakes the three, sidesteps left for three in the lead. He hit it.
The Badger Sports Network from Learfield.
Drives the lane, draw and kick, right quarter, three. Got it again.
I'm Ben Affleck, and I want to thank you for joining me and supporting Paralyzed Veterans of America.
I joined the Navy to serve my country as a Navy SEAL. While parachuting with my platoon, my parachute didn't open. And I broke my neck. It left me paralyzed. Paralyzed Veterans of America was by my side from that moment on.
Since 1946, Paralyzed Veterans of America has kept a promise to our wounded veterans. We will never leave a fallen comrade behind.
Thanks to PVA, paralyzed veterans are getting specialized medical care and treatments. The benefits they've earned, the jobs they want, and the accessible vehicles and homes they need.
I just don't think my family would be as happy as they are without the support that I received from Paralyzed Veterans of America.
Our veterans fought for us. Let's fight for them.
To learn more, go to PVA.org today.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio WFHR. 22 tonight, under mainly clear skies, winds out of the west, 5 to 10 miles per hour. High of 35 tomorrow. 1 to 2 inches of snow tomorrow night through Tuesday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 37.
From the home of NASCAR's Dick Trickle, locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM, your news, talk, and sports station.
To listen to the greatest radio show ever. And due to contractual obligations and to shield our airwaves and corporate licensees from any semblance of liability, responsibility, and gullibility, we must tell you the views represented on this show are not necessarily those of this station or its management. This radio show contains differing points of view on current political topics, and due to the nature of its contents, it should be heard by everyone. Thank you for listening. 3, 2, 1. Now live from the Devil Radio Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, where the political party is just beginning. Welcome to the Devil's Advocate Show. Friends proving it's never personal, only politics.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
Here is your host, Mike Crute.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocate Radio Show, broadcasted live in the Shaw today, WAUK 540 AM 101.1 FM. I got my little buddy Dominic here with me, and we've been joined by a fine host in his own regard. He is the host of Morning Cannolis. He's a former U.S. attorney. He's a friend of ours, James Santel. Welcome back to your studio. We're borrowing your place for the day.
I think it's your studio, and I am delighted to be with you on any day of the week, Mike and Dom.
Thank you, Jim. Always good to see you, man.
And in that I skipped lunch today, the fact that you came bearing cannolis.
Oh, I did.
You are a godsend.
And so good. Those are from Gloriosos,
they are
right?
From yeah. Gloriosos, oh, yeah. Your old stomping grounds mm-hmm. there on Brady Street, and they wanted me to express their greetings to you right out here in Waukesha County.
All right, so we appreciate
cannolis
it.
Cannolis from Milwaukee into Waukesha.
Yes.
How's that?
Jim Santel, the breaking news, at least breaking to the public, is that the Biden administration has put forth another proposed, let's see how the headline reads, a student loan forgiveness plan, about $39 billion. Jim, obviously the last plan ill-fated, at least when it wound its way up to the U.S. Supreme Court. They dismissed Biden's method. Was the problem the method that the Biden administration tried to utilize, Jim? And do you think this one will end up with a similar fate?
Should be able to do this. $39 billion, as you said, student debt, about $804,000. I'm sorry, 804,000 borrowers who might be affected by this. Not nearly as broad as the previous plan was. But because this is under a different rubric, if you will, should be able to go ahead. The problem, according to the Supreme Court, with the prior constitution of this was that it was just too big and too new, and basically saying the Congress is the group that's got to do this, invokes something called the major questions doctrine that basically says that if Congress has not acted, the president, the executive, should not do something that's colossal in nature, involves a lot of finances. And so that's the reason why they struck it down. An awful lot of people, obviously, not in favor of that decision, a 6-3 decision. But this one should resurrect at least a portion of that with respect to this. It also has to do with, again, some accounting issues, I understand, from the past, cleaning up some records, some accounting things to make certain that all these accounts are, in fact, consistent with what the debts truly are. And it will accomplish some results, some good things for some of these borrowers out there. It is plainly not the big project that the Biden administration has first proposed through the education department.
But, Counselor, just because you think it's legally sound doesn't mean it will not be sued in the federal courts, because whatever this president proposes, there's a certain presumption amongst, well, there's litigation amongst Republicans. We know it's coming, Jim.
It is.
But you think this one, if I hear you, sir, and correct me if I'm wrong, I know you often do, this one you think has a better chance of standing up.
Right. Again, one of the problems that the Supreme Court identified was language underneath the act, which gave the Secretary of Education the ability to modify and amend the ways in which these accountants were taking place, did not say you could completely cancel them. Here, much closer to that, again, as I understand it, what you're doing is you're trying to do some math here to make certain the people who owe debts actually do owe these amounts. That strikes me as a truly executive kind of function, almost the kind of thing that an accountant could do. And again, absolutely, someone will run into court. Probably they're already putting that complaint together as we speak, challenging this. But boy, if the Supreme Court looks at this and says you can't even administer loans and do account financing, those kinds of things, independent of judicial review, that's going to be a pretty far stretch, I think.
Yeah. Our fine guest, James Santel. He is a former U.S. attorney. He is the host of Morning Cannolis right here on the Civic Media Network, Saturdays, 9 to 11. And Jim, I confessed, I've been indulging in the Morning Cannolis on Saturday. I've been listening up at the cabin, and I hear you all across the great state of Wisconsin on the Civic Media Network, usually on a radio station, on the Civic Media app if necessary. But Jim, Supreme Court rulings, there were some pretty significant rulings. And I've heard you talk about this, but for those that haven't found the joy of the Morning Cannolis yet, let's start with the last ruling on Biden's efforts to relieve student loan debt. Jim, did this feel like a meritorious ruling to you? I mean, sometimes you look and you say, I look at the progressives, the quote-unquote, the Kagans, the Sotomayors, and the Ketanji Brown Jacksons, and I say, are they completely off base, or do we perhaps have conservatives finding an ends justify the means sort of ruling?
Right. And I think in this case, you've got a fundamental difference on the court, not surprisingly, 6-3, about the role of government and the role of the executive branch in particular. The decision written by the Chief Justice in this case just drips of this notion that you've done an overreach, Joe Biden, that this is not something that you should do absent congressional action. Again, it's big, it's new, it's this major crimes, major questions doctrine, and only the Congress can be doing those kinds of colossal things. They've raised this before in other areas as well, including the COVID-19 business executive orders, those kinds of things. So we've seen this before, and it goes to, again, this fundamental notion, but what is government supposed to be doing? And what do you do ultimately if the Congress itself is not acting? If the Congress is not doing these things in the areas of environment and education, healthcare, commerce, all these kinds of things, guns, what is the president supposed to do, who's responsible, again, ultimately for the safety and security of the country? He acts, and then the Supreme Court comes back and says, nope, you can't do that. Only the Congress can do it. But the Congress is busy passing defense bills that are never going to make their way across the Capitol Hill. So that's the challenge. I think it's a fundamental disagreement on the court about the role of government in the 21st century. And we can package it inside of language and legal doctrines, but that's where it comes from.
Jim, I believe another 6-3 ruling that affected education quite a bit, effectively the elimination of affirmative action. And although the broader ruling, my understanding, didn't say, yeah, we've overturned prior precedent, Clarence Thomas made clear in his concurrence, I believe, that that was his take on this. And whether or not they acknowledged it through the language of the Supreme Court ruling, effectively, this just rolled back 40 years of precedent, didn't it, Jim?
It did, including a decision issued by Sandra Day O'Connor about 20 years ago saying, you know what, you can, in fact, take a look at race when it comes to deciding who's going to be in your entering class. She said that. She also said, you know, maybe in about 25 years or so may come a time when we don't have to do that. The entire court, including Thomas, seizes on and says, well, it's 23 years, not quite 25, and it's just about time. However, the larger issue here is, again, What do you think about the 14th Amendment? You've got a different view about what equal protection means. You've got the majority of the court, including Thomas, including the Chief Justice, saying that this is a colorblind portion of the Constitution. We don't look at race anymore. And that's what gets Ketanji Brown Jackson and Sonia Sotomayor and Elena Kagan hair on fire, right? Because they look at this and say, wait a minute, the 14th Amendment was passed in the wake of what? The Civil War. We were emancipating blacks, new citizens. We were trying to raise their level of economics and culture and education, healthcare, all those kinds of things. And it was meant to be remedial in its focus. If today you're telling me that that purpose of the 14th Amendment is no longer here, that's ridiculous. And it also goes back to this longstanding view that John Roberts has had, that we are living in a country where we no longer need to be concerned about race. Talked about that in the voting rights cases as well, right?
Well, that's, I'm sorry to interrupt, Jim, but didn't they, this very same court with Roberts ruling for the majority, also wrote that Alabama effectively still has a problem with racial disparities,
right?
And deserved another congressional district.
Right. In the strongest language possible. They basically just condemned the Alabama legislature for drawing these lines as they did. It could not have been stronger. Again, you've also got Brett Kavanaugh siding on the side of the majority there and making that kind of comment. That was a surprise, I think, to many people, because the two previous major cases coming out of the Supreme Court were cases that basically eviscerated the Voting Rights Act. Section 2, before that, Sections 4 and 5, case called Shelby County, Brnovich out of Arizona. And we thought, many people thought, this was going to be the final nail in the coffin. It was not. And it came as a surprise. And maybe, just maybe, this was John Roberts and Brett Kavanaugh, and certainly the liberals as well, saying, you know what? Maybe we need to back off on this. We need to preserve something related to the Voting Rights Act to ensure that people know the Supreme Court is still here to have some involvement in this. It was a surprise, not inconsistent with the prior decisions to carve out portions of the Voting Rights Act, but certainly a clear statement that race does, in fact, matter in America in 2023. And getting back to your point, seems to be at least superficially inconsistent with this notion that when it comes to admissions, we don't need to be concerned about race anymore because we are in a, not the Chief Justice's word, but many other descriptions of what he said, in a post-racial America. We are not.
Folks, you're listening to The Devil's Advocates Radio Show. James Santel, former U.S. attorney, host of Morning Cannolis, Jim. But also, this other case, the lady who never made a website, yes, for somebody who, right, didn't ask her to, who, right, is married to a woman. I mean, how and then allows for discrimination against what? LGBTQ?
Right.
What? Individuals who want to come and, you know, buy goods and services in public. How did this even get that far?
It shouldn't get that far. And you've identified the principal issue here that people are rolling their eyes about, not just scratching their heads. It has to do with standing. How many times have we talked about it,
right,
on this very broadcast, right? In order to bring something into court, you and I have got to have a case or controversy. We've got to be in disagreement with each other. There have got to be damages that we show that you've done something to me. I can say, you know what?
Is that the ripening? I hear the term ripening. Is it the damages that creates the ripening?
They're somewhat related. Once a case is ripe, it means that you've suffered some damages, right? So it's a little bit different language, but it's pretty darn close. Here, as you indicated, where is the standing? Colorado has not yet enforced this anti-discrimination law against her. She's not opened her business, as you just noted. The one fellow that they point to and say he was the one who was coming in says, I know nothing about this. I'm married to a woman. There are no